An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Board Games Anonymous, the podcast of board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
Hey, and this is Anthony.
And this is episode 504, PAX Unplugged Preview for 2024. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Hey fans, hey friends, PAX Unplugged is coming. The big convention happening in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The big United States of America is going to hit, by the time that you're listening to this, later this week. Anthony, you are excited. This is yet another board game convention happening in your neighborhood because it's your thing, man. They know. They're throwing you a party, bro.
Are they?
They are.
Oh,
first cool. Origins because it's your birthday, and then PAX Unplugged because you live in down the street from it.
Yeah, that'd be great. It's if I didn't have so much going. No, we put it in December, guys. Put it in October. There's nothing happening in October.
Why isn't there a board game convention in October?
Yeah, I mean, in the U.S., they're that's all in Essen. That's the problem. Everybody's like, "Well, I'm in Germany." I'm like, well, what about here?
What about you, know? You, Anthony? That's what you gotta ask.
What about me?
There's two conventions. But why not a third?
Yeah. Why? Why does it got to be the week after Thanksgiving when there's a million things happening? No. It's amazing. It's exciting. It's very cool, and it's great because I can get off of work on Thursday and hop on the train and meet up with you guys about 10 minutes later. I don't have to drive anywhere or fly anywhere or do anything. Just finish up my class and wander on over to the convention center. So that's very exciting. It's such a good show and psyched for it. We got a million things going on this year too. So it's going to be a nice, fun, full, busy show.
Yeah, one of the great things about PAX is certainly it's a great show. It's a great opportunity to catch up on all the great Essen releases. And there's a lot of fun presentations. We're part of two of those, but there's a lot more that's happening out there. Some amazing special guests that are going to be there presenting. And we're going to bring you a preview for this episode so that you're in the know about everything that's going to be happening, especially the great games that are going to be out there. And then we're going to give you a full recap on the next episode with our friend Chris from Board Games for the Better and tell you how everything went. So even if you can't be at PAX Unplugged this year, you're going to know every cool thing that happens there and all the great games so that you can pick them up during the holiday seasons.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, don't feel left out.
No.
We're going to be there and then we'll tell you all about it. But, it's not going to be like, oh, and then we went to this really cool place for lunch. and then, we walked across Market Street and you wouldn't believe what's across Market Street, you guys.
I've listened to that podcast.
I have also listened to that podcast. And so I know a lot of people see oh, it's a convention recap. Blech. And I guarantee you we will not be just discussing what our day was. We're going to be talking about the games we played, the new stuff we saw. And if anything cool or funny happened, we will discuss it, but in a cool and funny way.
That's right.
I promise.
The podcast is the epitome of cool and funny.
Oh, yes.
In a tabletop context, at least.
Yeah. We know what we're doing.
It's cardboard based. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. And cardboard is hilarious.
It is.
Yeah. Who couldn't laugh at a good old Amazon box?
I know. It's true. Or every time you play any of those games out there where you're trying to save the forest and you're using cardboard components for it.
I had a student call me out on that. I brought in a bunch of games. I was like, these games all kind of explore climate change. And 10 minutes in, he's looking through the games and he's like, these are all made with plastic and cardboard though. And I'm like, touche, good sir. Touche.
Are you playing photosynthesis where you're growing trees out of material that came from trees?
Yeah.
It's like,
it's very meta and destructive.
Where you play, what is it, Dinosaur Island, and all the pieces are plastic.
So much plastic, yes.
And where did that petroleum come from? I don't know. Probably dinosaurs.
Ooh, we're playing with real dinosaurs.
So we'll have a lot of fun on the recap episode, and Chris will be on with us, so we'll have a lot of fun with Chris talking about everything that's happened, the ups and downs, and especially everything that's cardboard-based. But before we get into all that, we want to let you know, of course, of all things that will happen. So that's part of our future review. Of course, we have our acquisition disorders at the table, so keep listening. A lot of fun coming up. But Anthony, you got a lot of stuff that's coming up with BGA. Hit us with all those things.
All right. Let's get the announcements out of the way. This is my students' favorite part of the class, I can tell you. They're definitely not sleeping when I'm trying to tell them the important things they need to know. So Blue Sky, we set up Blue Sky accounts last week. You can follow us over there at BG Anonymous or at BG Academics. So definitely do that. We will be posting there regularly. All of our episodes will go up there. We'll ask questions, questions of the week, all that good stuff. So if you're not really on Facebook and you're like, why didn't you guys post on X anymore? We're now on Blue Sky. That's why. So check it out. We're also on Instagram too. So everything will be posted over there if it's visual and makes sense to post there.
Yeah. So if you haven't followed us there previously, especially Blue Sky, since we're brand new there, please do so. Because we're not going to be posting on X, and Facebook stole things. So that's going to still happen as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Everything goes up on Facebook first, cause that's where the most of you are. But, it'll also go on those other platforms. If you're like, I don't like Facebook, which fair.
Totally fair.
Yeah. All right, other big stuff going on. Specifically, at PAX, we will be presenting two different panels. We've been talking about these for weeks, so if this is news to you, go back and listen to our other episodes. They're really good. So we're going to be presenting on Saturday, this Saturday, which is crazy. I got to mentally prepare myself for this. But we're going to be presenting our panel on teaching in board games. So we're going to be talking, it's Engagement, the Secret to Teaching with Board Games, and it's about all about using board games in higher educational settings. So I'll talk about using them in my classroom. Will's going to talk about using them in his counseling practice. Chris will be talking about them in the career center.
Yeah. Right? We'll have a lot of good times with that and give you a lot of good information. Because again, we want to bring as many people as possible to the table, but also once you're at the table playing tabletop games, we want to let you know that you can actually take them other places and do really super cool stuff with them.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of really interesting. It's not just like, here's the class I made, but specifically like, here's the theory behind it. Here's what was designed and here's how it worked. And here's some cool stuff that came out of that. So if you have any interest in any of that, and you know, there's tips in there too about just using teaching games in general.
Yeah. And even if you're not a professional out there in the field using tabletop games, first off, you should be. But even if you're not, maybe you have kids at home, maybe you have family, you have friends. And sometimes concepts are difficult to communicate. Tabletop games do a really good job of that. And again, maybe even in some circumstances you've tried, but again, especially if you're looking or learning to how to teach games better, Anthony's really great as far as his presentation is concerned to let you know why certain games work and other games don't work. And sometimes you'd be surprised because we love tabletop games and we have all experienced the ups and downs of putting the game in front of somebody and it just fails. And there's reasons for that. And Anthony covers those reasons for that. And I think that's important to understand. So maybe you don't have a classroom setting context, but maybe you have a family context or a friend context. And like what games really would work for them would be really surprising to you.
Yeah. No, it really is. It's so applicable across so many things. All right. So that's Saturday. Check that out. 2:30 on Saturday in the Crab God Theater. On Sunday, also in the Crab God Theater at 4:00, we'll be presenting our panel, Role for Inclusion, Empowering Accessible Tabletop Gaming. Chris, you're going to be representing Board Game Academics and Anonymous there, mm-hmm. but we're also joined by Chris from Board Games for the Better, Joe from Guardians Mental Health, Josh from Video Game Clubs of America, Derek from Nomnivore Games, and Brianna from SLP Literacy Corner. So big crew, big crew talking about all things related to just general accessibility and how we can empower that as an industry, as advocates, as gamers, in tabletop gaming.
Yeah. Again, our mission, as always, since the very beginning to now and hopefully forever in the future, is to bring as many people to the table as possible so you have as many gamers to game with. And again, for a lot of people out there, that is challenging. So all of these experts that run all of these organizations with all this data and research and backgrounds and stories, they're going to help you bring more people to the table. So again, if you're dropping games in front of people and it's not flying and flowing so much, there probably is a reason for that. And this panel certainly can help you with that. And again, we're here to kind of communicate all of that to you. So if you're not at PAX, we'll talk more about this. But again, a lot of this information can be found on boardgameacademics.com, our website, because there's a lot of video presentations there.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely check those out. Mm-hmm. So speaking of boardgameacademics.com, our other big thing here I wanted to mention real quick is Victory Points. So this is our new column that will be launching in December. So we'll have our first essay up very soon here in the next 2 weeks or so on boardgameacademics.com. And this is a column that will feature scholars, professionals, enthusiasts from throughout tabletop gaming, diverse communities within that space, talking about their own unique unfiltered perspectives on how gaming can influence the world. So if whether you're an academic or not, you can submit an essay to this column. We'll be considering on a rolling basis. There's no open period for this. And we want those unique voices. We want those diverse voices talking about not only own experience, but like observed elements of the hobby and how it influences everybody. So, head on over to boardgameacademics.com/essay-submissions, sponsored by Game Pathways, exciting new opportunity. And again, Chris mentions this every week, cause I forget, this is a paid opportunity. You can make money. Mm-hmm. So we are paying people, again, with the support of Game Pathways for their submissions. So submit your essay or outline. We'll take a look. We'll be in touch with you almost immediately, and we'll work together and get something up.
Yeah. So please let us know. Or if you know somebody who could submit something or be interested, please let them know and reach out.
Yep.
All right. So that's everything that's happening with us out there. I think a lot of stuff happening.
Yeah, I know. Always.
And again, by the time you listen to this, we'll be days away from PAX. We'll be heading out over there. So again, you could hit us up. Again, Blue Sky, Instagram, Facebook, Board Gamers Anonymous website has our email addresses up there as well. So hit us up. Let us know where you're going to be, what you're going to be doing. We would love to run into you, say hi, and maybe get a game together. All right. So that's everything that's happened on our end. Anthony, let's get on to what really matters, my friend. It's about the games we want to get to the table. Let's talk about our acquisition to sorters.
All right, let's do it. So mine is a very old game that's getting a second edition. So this is the very first of the Oniverse games, designed by Shadi Torbe back in 2012, which isn't actually that long ago, but also it's a million years ago. So it's hard to decide. This is the first of those games. There are now, I think, 9 of them that have come out over the years. This came out before Onirim, so there wasn't even an Oniverse when this game was released. And it very quickly went out of print and never came back, even though all those other games got reprinted and brought back multiple times. So this is, if you're not familiar with it, Oniverse is a card game from Shadi Torbe. It says 1 to 2 players. These are ostensibly all solo games. They all have rules for 2 players, but they start as solo, which is why I love them. And they almost all use cards as their general mechanism. Some have other stuff going on. There's a couple tile games, but they all fit in these small little, like, 8x7x7 boxes. They're all stacked up next to me here on my shelf. And they're beautiful. Beautiful productions. They were once upon a time produced by Z-Man. They're now produced by Inpatience. But they all have kind of the same look and feel, which is it's just a wonderful vibe. So Urbion is kind of going back to the early roots of all that. So you're trying to balance out here the dreams in the various districts of the city that you're kind of building out. Onirim, if you're not familiar with it, is also a game about dreams and like managing these different things kind of coming into and out of the quote unquote mind that you're playing through. So Urbion is a little bit of like a prototype of that. But this is the second edition of Urbion. So while the original was like a deck of cards in a small deck box, this is the full size 7x7 Shadi Torbe box. And the other thing that these games always have is like 5 to 10 expansions, right? You'll have some kind of base game, very basic, and then a whole bunch of ways to tweak that gameplay and complicate it and build on it and add things and make it more fun or interesting or harder or whatever. And now we're getting that with Urbion, plus new artwork by Elise Plessis, which is awesome just because it just looks fantastic. I love this vibe, this whole aesthetic of these games. And I think this is one with like the purple and yellow Like the dreams and the nightmare view. It's just really cool. So I've wanted this one for a long time. It's hard to find. And that little tiny box, when I could find it, often was beaten up or just, it doesn't really fit the vibe of the collection. So I've been waiting for this one to come around. I'm excited for it. I have it on pre-order. I think it's coming next month sometime. So yeah, Urbeon. It's honestly, if you've never heard of these and never played any of them, it's probably not for you. You should start with Onirim, which is like the simplest, most straightforward of these. And there's an app for it. So you can just try that out for free on your phone.
Yeah.
If you have any of them though, and you like it, or if you're just like, didn't know there was a new one coming, Urbeon is here and track it down. These are all like $25. So, you know, it's only expensive if you decide to buy all of them, but any one of them is pretty affordable, pretty accessible. They're easy to learn, quick to teach, a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think about 12 years ago, I was at a game store and I was waiting for a game and the game store manager came up to me and was like, here, play this. And I'm like, what is this? He's like, this is a solo game. I'm like, you're messing with me. Because again, this was like 12 plus years ago at this point. And I think it was Onirim that I had played. And I was just like, oh, they can do this with games. Yeah. And then obviously you became like super solo guy of the earth. And while I don't own a lot of solo games. Obviously I played the app a lot and the app is really a lot of fun and kind of creepy too, which is surprising for a solo game at the same time.
Totally. Yeah. I should clarify too, because I think I said, Urbeon came out before Onirim. Urbeon came out before Onirim second edition.
Yeah.
So Onirim came out in 2010, which is why you played it before Urbeon came out. Because I know some people are just screaming at their phones right now, like, you're wrong. But like, I know, I've been in your shoes. I understand. But yeah, no, it's crazy. It's he figured out a formula, has made it work across all these different games, and they're all have something interesting to offer. So it's cool.
Yeah, and it's one of the at least for me, I'm heavily critical of the solo games. And I have played obviously very few. So again, I don't have a good breadth of knowledge here to make educated, you know, guesses, so to speak. But the ones I've played, certainly this is, since it is crafted as a solo game, in its intelligence is in that play. It's not like you're taking a giant co-op game and you're trying to shrink it down and are using some weird automa to kind of like figure it out and stuff like no, this is built to be this way.
Right.
And it's really great. And even I, as a non-solo game player, does love that game. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. For me, again, I guess going a little bit way back too, Anthony, 2009, there was a game that I think you played with me at some point. This is Tales of the Arabian Nights. And I remember playing this game. It was from Z-Man Games. And it was this massive game that people had talked about and were really excited about. And I was like, what? Just like, you play the game, you're like, huh? You play a character that's going through, you're a hero or heroine, and you're on a story of adventure told by Sherazade. And it's all of these different kind of adventures that you're going through. And primarily the game mechanic, if it is such a game mechanic, is as you're traveling around, you're encountering different people and situations and different story elements pop up. So you can come across a beggar and you're like, well, what do I want to do with the beggar? And it gives you a couple of possibilities to do. And like, it could be an evil monster. You don't know it. It could be the prince and you don't know it. It could just be a beggar who needs money. And like, you could assault the beggar, you could help the beggar, like you could ignore the beggar, right? Like, again, and then those different outcomes have different responses, and it can be very random, and it sometimes doesn't have rhyme or reason, but it does have a lot of that choose your own adventure nature to it. And again, way back in 2009, this was revolutionary because games really didn't do this too much. They had that kind of role player kind of feel in a board game with this giant book of amazing stories. Well, on GameFound, the Tales of the Arabian Nights, the 40th anniversary edition, is coming out. I can't believe it's been that long. And it's completely updated, completely revised. And you get to, once again, delve into the adventures of Sinbad, Sherazade, Aladdin, and all of those other 1,000 plus tales. And as you're exploring throughout, you're coming through a number of different encounters with a number of different choices that you can make that leads to kind of chaos and fun along the way. This edition is obviously updated, modernized, streamlined, of course, and provides a lot more gameplay, including a solo mode, which is good because this game is a story that you can kind of play out together. You don't necessarily need other players. It also comes with really nice standees, great updated artwork, huge book of over 25,000 paragraphs that are different story elements in the game. So you certainly could pick your own adventure for almost literally forever. And this will be up on GameFound. So by the time this episode comes out, this will be up for a day or two. And you can check this out on GameFound.
Great. Yeah, I remember this back in the day. It's funny that they're doing this at the same time that the Arthurian Knights just came out. But
is that weird?
I guess you get your choice now, which one you want.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, good stuff.
All right, well, those everything that we want to get to the table. Now on to our At the Tables with BGA. Anthony, we're going to let people know if these games are a buy and they should run out and pick those games up, if those games are a play and they should sit down and enjoy them, or if those games are a dodge and they should avoid them. And every once in a while, let's be honest, a game's a burn and you just got to get rid of it. So, Anthony, what'd you play this week?
All right. I played a game that so this was sent to us as a review copy. And specifically, the reason why we have it is because I was looking at the email that got sent to us and my son happened to walk by, who absolutely loves dogs. And he's like, ooh, get that. I was like, okay.
Okay.
They're going to send it to us. It is called Clash of Corgis. It is a card game so it pitches itself as having three modes. The version of the game I have just has the one set of rules, so I'm not going to talk about the other two modes. It is a ladder climbing game with a lot of take that elements to it, but the take that elements aren't too mean. They're really just kind of manipulative to the gameplay. So you have a deck of cards with these little corgi illustrations, which are really cute. It's fantastic. It's very cute and, you know, cuddly. And they represent different suits and numbers throughout the game. So each number has a different illustration, and then there's suits, and then those illustrations are different colors, which is kind of cool. And some of them are a little bit different, right? So, like, they're casting different magic or doing different attacks, which is great, because I think one of the big things we kind of ding card games for is they use the same artwork across everything. And so it's a ladder climbing game, which means you need to play cards that are higher than the person before you. And then you can play pairs or triplets, etc., on all the way up to kind of beat things. So it's 1 and 9, and then there's an ace, and then there's a wild card. And that's it. But when you play a card, each number has a special effect. So, like, if you play a 1, you will draw a card. If the suit matches the one you just played, you just win the hand. Which is not that big of a deal, because ultimately what you're trying to do is get rid of all the cards in your hands. So you're just kind of making it harder for other people to get rid of their cards if you do that. If you play a 9, the person after you is eliminated from that hand. If you play a 4, then you can choose to make them play below you instead of above you, which might hurt them, depends on where you are in the hand. So it's a lot of fun little things to kind of tweak the gameplay a little bit. I honestly, reading the rules, I wasn't super impressed, but then playing it with the kids, they like it. Now, they haven't played a ton of ladder climbing or trick-taking type of games, other than like Skull King, which is strictly trick-taking. But it's simple enough and straightforward enough. It's cute enough artwork. And then the take that rules aren't that mean. Like, I was worried about that part and nobody's gotten upset so far. So that's good. So it's, yeah, it's a decent little card game. It's not doing anything revolutionary, but it's cute. So if you're like, oh, I like dogs, I like the artwork, I think this is fun to have. I think it'd be worth picking up for that alone. And it's kid friendly for the most part, right? Like, so if you're looking at a take that style ladder climbing game and you're like, I don't want the kids to get mad, that hasn't really happened. And my kids get mad at all these things all the time. So Clash of Corgis is a play. If it was super expensive, I don't know if it would get up that high, but just as a inexpensive, accessible little thing. And my daughter really likes it. So there you go. Clash of Corgis.
Adorable.
It is cute. I've seen the artwork before and I was like, oh yeah.
Corgis are cute. That's a cute dog.
Yeah, it's a very cute dog. Our dog is half corgi, so my son is obsessed with them. all right, the other game I played, which is much bigger, and Chris, you played it as well, is Inventions, Evolution of Ideas. So we've talked about this a little bit the last few weeks. It's come up in some of our conversations and our gift guide and stuff. But, you know, I just want to give a more formal review of it, because it is Vitalis Cerda. Did play it. I've played it now a few times. and don't want to just kind of skip over it because we played it during the the dearth of our top 100 list. So this is coming on the heels of Weather Machine, which was kind of a dud for me, at least, just because the rules were a little overwhelming. The game was a little too abstract. It was really hard to kind of wrap your head around what you're supposed to do. And that's the beauty of a Vitale Cerda game, is that it's not too abstract. So you can have a really heavy, complicated, overwrought game with a ton of rules, but everything makes sense because what you're doing is part of a system that you're familiar with. I'm making a car, so I need to go get parts for the car, and then I need to build the car, and then I need to test drive the car, and then I need to sell the car. Yeah, there's seven possible things and like 18 actions, but they all make sense in the flow. So Kanban is great. Inventions is somewhere in between, I would say. It makes sense because we've all played like civ building games or tech tree type games, or just generally worked with this idea of like inventing things and building up on technologies. But it's a little abstract as well, because that's all you're doing, right? You're not like crafting these things or building things. You're just kind of sending around these scholars to develop ideas that will then eventually turn into inventions. And then those will be broadcast to the world somehow. So it's kind of vague in that sense, but I feel like the gameplay in this one has been fairly well streamlined, not to the point of simplicity, but to the point where everything kind of flows and makes sense of where you're going. So gameplay wise, what you're doing, and anytime we try to explain a Vitale Cerda game, there's a little bit of challenge to it just because there is so much going on. And everything feeds into everything else. You're like, oh, you do this action, but that relates to this action, but that relates to this action. So I'm just going to try to keep it fairly simple. You have a central space where there are 10 possible actions you can take, right? And each of those actions is presented in a pair. You can only take one of those two at any given time, right? So if you take the action on the left to like develop an idea, you cannot then send people out onto the map because those two are next to each other, right? Until you remove the one. So you consider them like one action space with two possible actions. So kind of like that Gallerist vibe, where if you go to a space, you're picking one, and now you're in that spot. You cannot do the other one until you come back around. You're going to put these markers out. You will have a large marker and then two smaller markers. The large marker stays where it is. So once you've played it, it does not move until you take it in the next round and move it somewhere else. So that spot is now blocked for you for the next two actions every time you play the large marker. Something to keep in mind. It's just a quirk of the thing, but it's an interesting mechanic. And so each of these actions really just kind of feed into one series of things. You're getting these idea cards, which you're going to try to develop and invent. Or you are going out into the world and kind of spreading the good word of those ideas. Now any one person isn't just going to be able to develop the idea by themselves, right? So somebody's going to get the card and somebody's going to invent the thing, and then somebody's going to improve upon the thing. The improvement is optional, and then eventually it goes out, right? So you can have one person do two of those, but not necessarily one person do all three of those. And so a lot of the times you might have cards where like I'm inventing solar sail. Okay, well I'm ideating basically. This is my idea. Now somebody else can come along and invent that idea. Someone else can then come along and improve upon that idea. And then everybody gets something from that because we've all collectively developed that idea, which is a really interesting idea because there you go. Because it's not everything. Things aren't just isolated to any one player. You're not just doing your own thing. Everything can be interacted with by other people. You're also throwing stuff out there and then you're like, OK, it'd be great if someone else finished that off so I can go do what I'm doing over here and just I'll get the points out of that. But I don't get those points until it's done. So I guess I can go there and do it myself. So there's a lot of things to kind of keep track of. You also have your own personal player board, of course, with a bunch of stuff. So as you develop different ideas and go out in the world, you'll get these different tiles, and the tiles will go into a little grid on your player board. The grid will cost things, right? The number of tiles that you can place out every round is determinant on some other factors. Also, the cost that of putting those tiles out depends on how many you have collected. So you have like a little row at the bottom of your space where you can have up to four tiles kind of in reserve, ready to play out. So when you get one, you don't get to use it right away. You then have to pay to put it out. If you fill that up and have all four full, the first one's free. If you only have one out there, they start to cost a lot. So you have to kind of balance the efficiency of that. Like, how many tiles do I want to put out? How much do I want to pay to do it? And those tiles will do all sorts of things. Like, you have ongoing special bonuses, you have income options, you have in-game scoring. It's really up to you how you want to develop all of that. There are a bunch of bonus actions you can take. So you'll have these little icons or tokens that you can use to take bonus actions throughout the game. There are also these different like milestones tiles that you can gain access to that you need to be able to invent different ideas. So you might have a card in your tableau, but you can't necessarily use it yet because you haven't researched or interacted with that milestone. Overall, there's a lot going on here because it's Vitalis Erda, but everything flows together in a way that makes sense. As usual, Ian O'Toole's artwork is fantastic and really like ties everything together visually, shows you what you're supposed to be doing, how things interact with each other. It is a little more abstract than some of Vitalis Erda's other, like, you know, games that are based on specific like jobs in the world, right? You're not running an art gallery. You're not running a car factory. You're not running a vineyard. You are quote unquote inventing things, right? What does that look like? What are you actually doing? It's a little abstract, but we all kind of get the idea, right? People have ideas, people invent things, people develop those things, then they promote those things. And that's all of what you're doing here. So it's thematically in between. It's not quite as abstract as Weather Machine, but it's not quite as on, you know, at that level of like an On Mars. It's also not as complex as like an On Mars. It's definitely on the lower end of complexity for Lacerda. Like, I would put it on par with like The Gallerist. Similar action mechanisms as well, just without the, like, you have the worker placement. You have two options to choose from when you place the worker. It's good. I had fun with it. I think it's in the middle for me of his games, but the middle for Lacerda is still extremely good, right? I played Weather Machine. It's like, not great. And then it's just, and there's something about, you know, it's just like a perfect balance, and he just hit it so many times, and then all of a sudden he didn't, for me at least. And this one feels like kind of coming back to that a little bit. It's not up there with On Mars or The Gallerist for me, or Lacerda, or not Lacerda, Lisboa. But it's really solid. So I'd say as a Lacerda game, it's a play. As a game for me, it's probably a buy, and I'm going to hold on to it, but it's right on the line. Like, if somebody's like, I need to get a Lacerda game, I wouldn't recommend to get this one. I would say get The Gallerist or Lisboa, but it's good. I'm happy to have played it. I enjoyed it.
It is good. It is, for me, it's not as high as it is for you in his little ludology. I think it's lower on that because, as you said, while it's not Weather Machine kind of abstract, the taking of certain actions here did feel a little more abstracted and mechanical, right, than thematic. Like, the action spots themselves are very thematic. Like, it makes a lot of sense as far as like coming up with the idea for the invention, creating the invention, innovating the invention, marketing or promoting or communicating about the invention. Like, brilliant, smart idea, makes a lot of sense. People are able to jump on with something. So if someone's inventing, you could be communicating and really stay in the game. Like, it doesn't have to, you don't have to do it all yourself. And that's one of the interesting aspects of the game. So it does have a little bit of that brass element to it, where you put one part out there, but other people are doing their part. Mm-hmm. And together, even though you're both scoring points, which you have to do this, you're both benefiting from it. So someone's not stealing from you, but they're scoring points from it. But you have to have other people go to your spots. Otherwise, you'll never be able to produce all these inventions. The action board itself, again, I don't know. Like, it all does come together. I will say that. The sideboard with the action tiles that you place out that gave you ongoing abilities or one-time shot kind of things or end-game bonus points seemed a little of an extension. It didn't seem to be, like, crafted into the game so much as just, like, and there's this thing that you can do over here that is, like, you know, you're taking tiles and you have to place them out there. So it's a play for me. It's not as, again, like you said, as far as The Gallerist, Lisboa, I would also put, you know, On Mars, even Viticulture, you know, I think, a little bit higher up, especially more the thematic side of it. So, but I was happy to see that he was coming more back towards, at least a little bit more towards thematic gameplay.
Yeah, yeah. It's I feel like he just had this couple ideas trapped in there and had to get them out. Because the next game is Speakeasy, which looks very thematic. Because he's so good at it. He's the master of it. It's not even like I don't want to see him make an abstract game. It's just...
Well, when you,
you're so good at marrying a theme to mechanics, like, do that.
It's required, right? Because when you have these very complex games, if a game is not thematic, if a game is not built in such a way that you can assume the next action or assume how things flow together or work together, if you don't have some prior life experience or knowledge about, like, oh, it's farming, right? I've never been a farmer. But I understand that you have to plow the field, then plant the seed, and then harvest the seed or water first and something like that. Like, I have a general knowledge base. And since Agricola, again, a very complex game, utilizes some of the base knowledge I already have, I can encounter that game in a meaningful way without being overwhelmed with the complexity of it. Like, I understand the mechanics,
right?
Even though I've never played the game before. So this is still a little bit loose, a little too loose, as far as I'm concerned, but like, it's, again, it's going back to where he was, which is like, hey, do you want to rebuild his boa? I'm like, I have no idea. Like, sure you do. Let me show you. Or you want to sell paintings in the gallery? That makes no sense to me. Well, sure it does. And like, oh, okay. That makes sense. So, yeah. So the heavier the game it is, the more thematic I feel it needs to be, just because it lends itself to like engagement in a meaningful way.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah. And I think the reason Inventions works where Weather Machine didn't quite is that this one's not quite as heavy. I know the weight on BGG is like a 4.67. I don't think this is a 4.67.
No.
Because everything is just gridded out. Like, you have these 10 actions. Yeah. All, like, five of them feed into each other and the other five feed into each other. There's really just like two buckets of things you're doing.
And
you got to remember what all those things are. There's a lot of iconography. But once you wrap all your head around that, it's fairly straightforward. In a way that I think other games aren't.
Yeah,
but
you have to take a chance. You have to take a second to go through, like, what's available. Should I, can I take?
Right.
You know, those things are not. I will say the one thing, again, that should have been more thematic is how the technology kind of jumps.
Oh, yeah.
So like.
But every game does this. I don't know how you solve it. Like, Beyond the Sun solved it, but then that game got very samey very quickly.
Sure. I mean, Seven Wonders did it. I mean, again, a small game, but
that's such an abstract game, though.
Like, well, I mean, it's just so weird to have that on, like, oh, the printing press and like AI technology is coming out now. You're just like, huh?
Yeah, they are numbered out. It's just things don't go away as quickly as you think they should.
But they don't, you know, and they do benefit off each other, right? You need prior technologies invent or prior inventions in order to build other inventions, but still it doesn't really play like that. It doesn't play like a civilization tech tree, so to speak.
No, it doesn't feel like you're building a tech tree at all.
No. And again, almost I would even argue that like the invention part of this board game is not even necessary. Like it could have been themed something else.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, like I agree, because it is abstracted to that point. I wonder what that would be though. It just barely works for me.
I agree.
Think like same. I think there's a fine line here, and I'm like slightly to the right, and you're like right on it.
Yeah, I think it's a play. I enjoyed my play of it. I think once you get past that kind of first or second round of like, what is this? Because again, there's a lot of actions, but once the board starts to get filled, then the choices kind of limit themselves. And again, the abstract nature of the map.
Yeah,
that's the thing too, that you have to kind of accommodate as time goes on. But again, it's still a Serta, so there's still nothing necessarily super clunky about it. It's just some of the presentation materials are not as intuitive as you would have hoped.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. All right, there. Inventions, Evolution of Ideas.
Yeah.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Maybe you were inspired by a recent international trip, became obsessed with a foreign film or TV show, wanted to communicate better with a loved one, or just felt like developing a new skill. With Rosetta Stone, learning a new language is easier than you thought. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Japanese, Dutch, and more. Learning is immersive and designed for long-term retention, so you fully learn to speak, listen, and even think in that language. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
All right, well, I got two games. Well, I got a bunch of games since we've last talked to the table. First, I'm going to give you a preview review because I did not play a full game of this, but my friend Joe from New Jersey did us a real solid, came all the way out from North Jersey to teach us Scholars of the South Tigris. This came out in 2023. This is from, I guess, everyone's like good friend Shem Phillips these days. And it's yet another Shem Phillips game that looks like a Shem Phillips game. And that's a really positive thing. Although every once in a while, I'm not sure which Shem Phillips game I'm playing because they all look almost identical.
Yeah, they do.
So I'm just like, have I played this? I'm not really sure. It kind of looks like something I played. And the components and the artwork and sometimes most of the mechanics seem like straight down the line. I really have to kind of remind myself of all the different games that he's put out. And again, I think people are kind of sleeping on the fact that the man's a machine. Like, geez, so many games out there. So when this came out to the table, I was like, I've played this. I'm sure. Like, this seems like something I've played. And I'm like, it's not Raiders of the North Sea. It's not Architects. It's not Paladins. It's not Visicounts. It's not Raiders. It's not Wayfarers. Like, it's not Scholars. Okay. All right. I don't think I've played this one. So let's play this one. And it's really interesting. It's got a very different concept for a game. And it's about, basically comes down to basically translating language, right? You have these scientific discoveries in these manuscripts that come from around the world. And you are utilizing linguists to translate these foreign scrolls from their native language to Arabic so that the scholars in the South Tigris can benefit from all of this information that they're getting now. So basically what this game comes down to, it's a bag builder, which is really interesting because it's a bag builder for dice. The dice play a really interesting part here because the pip value on the dice typically matters as far as the actions that you take in the game, because some of the actions in the game require a certain number in order to be able to benefit from certain spots on the board. And the color of the dice matter. There are white dice in this game, which can be beneficial to get you to a certain pip number. But also at the end of the game, the difference between the color dice and the white dice, whoever has more color dice, you know, in the ratio, is going to score a good number of points at the end of the game. So, and also the white dice kind of are a little bit problematic, even though they help you with the pips. You want to have colored dice because a number of spots on the board required to have a particular color. Now, here's a really fun part of the game. The dice themselves, at least the ones that you can generally get, come in primary colors, but there are spots on the board that are secondary colors. So there are green spots on the board, there's orange spots on the board, purple spots on the board. So in order to be able to utilize a certain spot on the board, you're going to be playing action cards to your board that are going to give you the opportunity to place one or two dice down. And if you need purple, you have to place a red and a blue. And sometimes you actually need the number, the particular number as well. So again, that becomes an issue. there are meeples that come into play. If you play a meeple of the color of the die, it can turn to a six, which is great because, again, higher numbers are better because practically everything in this game benefits from a high number down. Or if you have like a white die, you can play a colored meeple of a particular color, let's say a red meeple, and then that die now has the color of red. So I was really fascinated by this idea of it wasn't just pulling dice and playing dice so I don't have the right die, but I can utilize the meeples to mitigate the dice, to bring different dice into play. And again, you can get secondary colored dice. So I had a green die in the game, which was great because I didn't have to keep making green throughout the game. But you do have to pull dice from the bag. And again, you may not get the color dice you need, the combination, or maybe you run out of dice, or maybe sometimes there's too many white dice in your bag, which can hinder you. Now, throughout the game, there's a lot of different actions that you can take, but primarily what it comes down to is translating these scrolls. So one of the actions that you may want to take is, first off, look at what the scrolls are out there and available to be translated. Great. Now you have an idea. On the actual scroll itself, it'll tell you what language that foreign scroll is in. Then you might want to hire a linguist and put them on the bottom of the board under your influence, and then take an action to be able to utilize that linguist and or other people's linguists or generic linguists on the board to translate that foreign language into Arabic. Sometimes you could do it with one linguist. Sometimes you need multiple ones to translate to different languages throughout. So the Hebrew to Greek, and then eventually to Arabic throughout the game. A really kind of fun action and opportunity. As the linguists become more and more benefited from, you pay them gold to actually utilize their services. If it's your linguist, if you have influence, you'll be able to tuck that under your player board. So when you play cards that get dice placed on them to utilize actions, you'll also be able to benefit from the linguists that have retired. But since they're under certain slots, you'll be able to gain an ongoing benefit throughout the game. I was really taken by this game. I've played a lot of his games previously, and some are better than others. Some are forgettable. And this one was very intriguing. It is something that you have to wrap your head around because, again, pips, colors, drafting from a bag in order to utilize, you know, again, the right thing, playing particular action cards that are also going to give you knight benefits. Sometimes the knight benefits are not the best, but again, you make those decisions. And then when you rest, you get the knight benefits and also you gain a lot of resources throughout the game. So it's highly interactive Euro. There is some chasing for certain supposedly contracts or again, scholarship that you're trying to translate. So there's a little bit of that kind of interaction. Not a lot of blocking in this game. So, you know, there is that kind of dice element in the game, but it plays pretty easy and pretty straightforward. So surprisingly enough, on Board Game Geek, and this came out in 2023, it's currently listed as a weight of 4.06. It is not a 4.06. If you get a good teach, like I did, thanks, Joe, then you will see it's probably like 3.5, 3.3. And again, I was really, intrigued by it. Did not play a full game, so I cannot give you a full absolute recommendation. Right now, for me, it's a play. If I do have an opportunity to actually play the game again, I hope so, I might actually move up to buy. This is the game out of all his games at this point that I've liked the best. And I was surprised because I they all seem the same to me. This seems like something different. So Scholars of the South Tigris.
That's awesome. Yeah, I have the exact same experience with his games where I'm like, I'll play one. I'm like, that's interesting. And then 2 weeks later, I'm like, which one was that? They're all the same in my brain. I think I only own one anymore. And that was why. So I'll have to try this one out.
Yeah, I've liked a couple of his games throughout, but they're just typically worker placement games and contract completions.
Right.
The idea of actually translating these languages, very thematic. And the idea of the bag building is a lot of fun. So it's a lot of different elements in this game that kind of you have to kind of pay attention to, which is great. All right. So I got a chance to play that. And I also got a chance to play Fromage, the cheese-making game that came out this year. It was another crowd-funded game. And in this game, you are a French cheesemaker of the 20th century, making, aging, and selling artisan cheese, because why not? There's a game for everything. What's really interesting about this game is as you're trying to become the most prestigious cheesemaker of all, the interesting or the cuteness or the value of the game comes down to this center board, this big round board that is sectioned off or cut into wedges. And this kind of giant cheese wheel with the wedges has a Lazy Susan. So you are going to have your own individual player board that's going to have a number of things on it, including buildings that are going to give you special abilities, livestock that's going to give you, you know, the milk to be able to produce cheese, and then a number of different fruits and berries that you're going to need in order to make some of the cheeses, as well as score points in the end of the game. And basically, it's a worker placement game, but your workers are, you know, your cheesemakers, your workers in this game are stuck into little plastic wedges of cheese. And each of these wedges of cheese represent a different type of cheese in the game. So you have to decide where to place your workers on the board, and they have to match the appropriate cheese on the board. So there's white, there's yellow, and there's blue. So you have a worker for each. And basically at the start of the game, one of those wedges is going to be facing towards you. You're going to decide where to place your worker wedge on the board. I'll talk about the four sections in a second. But depending on where you place them on the board, the wedge will be facing in a certain direction. So this is the kind of interesting smart part to it. So it's a worker placement game, but typically the better, more valuable actions are going to mean that you're going to have to commit your worker to kind of go around the board as it turns each round. So you may not see that particular worker for three turns. So that the board would actually have to turn three times for you to get that back. If you place it shorter, you might get the worker back the next round or the round after. So one, two, or three turns of that particular board is how long it's going to take for you to get your worker back. So you have to be really careful about placing your workers out because you may not get them anytime soon. Now, each of the different sections has a different scoring situation. So there's a bistro and it has nine tables. And your objective here is to put the cheese on particular plates. And if you fill both plates on a table, it becomes a multiplier. And you want to get in as many tables as possible with both pieces. If you only have one, it's no longer a multiplier. There's also the festival, which is a whole different situation. And in that particular area, there's a 5x5 grid, and you want to be able to place the cheese in a grid-like situation where they all line up and they can benefit off wild spots at the same time. That's going to score, you know, points exponentially. There's also the fromage, which is shelves in which you could place your cheese. This will give you additional resources and victory points at the game. And there are six different shelves. If you get a piece of cheese on each shelf, you gain more victory points. And finally, the villas have six different regions. It's a little map area board where you're trying to gain area control. So as you place your wedges out there, you gain control over multiple sections at the same time. Whoever has a majority is able to score the points at the end of the game. That's pretty much it. It seems like a lot. It's got really cool, you know, look to it. Definitely would bring a lot of people to the table, especially if you're a cheese person. Very thematic as far as everything goes in the game. The game does play very quick. The game is rather light, which is not a hit against it. But the game is so quick and simple, and yet at the same time limited based upon what wedge is facing you. If the wedge is facing towards you, that's the only place you can play for that particular round. So maybe you want to go for two particular areas. You have to wait for the board to go around. So you place your thing down and you wait for that, you know, that worker placement element to come back around to you. Or maybe your workers are locked up because you picked sections and it's going to take a little time to come back to you. So there is like a drop in the availability to have fun because your workers are gone and they're not coming back anytime soon. The player boards are slightly different, so you have some different special abilities. The game is kind of, you know, there's some elements of luck just based on where you start and who's jockeying for position in certain areas. So I almost feel in some cases the game plays itself. I think this game would definitely play very well on Board Game Arena with an AI, just because like there's always a best choice and it's kind of pretty obvious. So Fromage is probably going to get a dodge from me. It has a lot of the good looks, but it's just very limited in its actual gameplay capabilities. It's just very, it's on rails. You're like, oh, I do this. I wait. Okay, here's my pieces back. I wait. I can play on here. I wait. So it kind of kills me. So Fromage.
That's a shame. I love that mechanic of like putting stuff out and having to wait for it to come back and planning around that. Like when it's done well, that's some of the best stuff.
Yeah, I don't think it gives you enough secondary actions. It's not like Zulk in the Mayan calendar where you're doing things and things are locked down, but you're still able to do other cool things.
Right, yeah. Like, I feel like it lends towards complexity. Like, you think of, like, Barrage. Yeah. That game is super hard because you have to manage that wheel and where your resources are. And you don't want to buy too much stuff because then it's inefficient. But, yeah, I really like that idea, but it sounds like it's just kind of...
Yeah, and I think you also get locked down to one of the four sections. Like, you start in a certain area, and then everyone places. You start and say, like, you don't have access to the full board at any point. I think if you didn't spin the wheel and you had actions the whole time on all the four areas, then you actually have gameplay. I think in this game, this situation, you have happenstance. Like, I won the game by a lot of points, and I was just like, yeah, but I won it because of just certain things that happened and how it turned towards me and, you know, what I had available at the time. It didn't really feel like I earned the victory. So, again, maybe there's a variation as far as, like, maybe they could do that in the future. Just, like, stop the wheel, get to kind of strategize and put your stuff out, and then, like, the pieces will still come off in a particular time, but you would still have access to the full board. Because otherwise, I feel like I do this, I wait, I do this, I wait. I don't want to wait in board games. All right, well, that's everything they got to the table. Now on to our feature review. Our feature review of this week, of course, is the upcoming super pending fabulous fantastical explosive PAX Unplugged 2024. Anthony, we're previewing it, we're going to it, we're going to experience it firsthand live in Philly, Pennsylvania. So Anthony, what's coming up, what's happening, why is this convention so notable, my friend?
Because it's near me, and it's they've brought games to my house, and I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
No shipping fees there. Great.
Yeah, no shipping. I just pick it up, carry it home, hop on the bus. Boop.
You get all those things from Essen that would take you forever to get to.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, no, it's a fantastic convention. It's bigger than everybody realizes. Everybody I meet who goes for the first time, they're like, it's actually pretty big. And I'm like, it's always been this big. You just don't think of it as being that big, right? Because it has a cozy vibe.
It does.
But it's huge. There's a lot of people there. There's a lot of people bringing their games and everything. Like, there's a lot going on.
And bigger this year, right?
That's what they say. Although I've heard it's kind of, they're waffling in between. But they definitely seem to have opened up more space downstairs. So I'm excited to see what they did, if anything. Because it was very crowded last year.
Yeah, they've been eating BGG's lunch for quite some time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, BGG's. Yeah, it was always a small con, but now it's not even, it doesn't really have the cachet that it did before because people are just going to hold their stuff for PAX because 35,000 people come.
Yeah.
So, yeah, lots of good stuff. We have a lot of games that we want to talk about. And we, as usual, when we do these preview episodes, we use the Board Game Geek preview tool. We're not just going to run down the list because that would be, well, it'd be way too long and kind of boring. But just highlighting games that we are specifically interested in. Mm-hmm. So I have the list up. I know, Chris, you pulled some separate games that you're interested in. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to kind of highlight things that we're going to try to seek out. Not necessarily the games that have, like, the most thumbs, because I know that's how a lot of people organize it, but, like, games that we actually just want to check out and see what people are doing with.
And sometimes the thumbs are deceiving.
Yeah, people cheat a little. Maybe.
Like, the number one thumb game, I question...
Inferno?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't. It wasn't on my list to talk about, but yeah, it is up there at the top. And I'm like, okay,
someone made a deal with the devil to get that as number one. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know what it is? I think Grand Gamers Guild, they had their stuff up here like immediately, mm-hmm. like a month and a half ago, and then it's filled in around them, but they just got all those thumbs early.
Okay.
So, good on them, right? Good marketing.
Sure. I'm sure that's what happened.
Yeah. They do have Endeavor Deep Sea coming out. I am interested in seeing that. Mm-hmm. Whether I want to play it or not or get it, I don't know. But just like seeing how they've converted that game mm-hmm. with all its problematic elements into a different theme. And at lower cost, which I also find interesting. It's like $55, which is it's not bad.
It's with a smaller company, too, which is nice.
Yes. Yeah. So I would like to see how that works. I know it's been out for a little bit, mm-hmm. About a month or so. So people have been playing it, but I'm interested to see how it goes.
Me too.
The first big one that I'm excited about, though, here at the, towards the top of the list is SETI. Search for Extraterrestrial Life from CGE. So the theme is cool. It's about the literal search, so it's science-based, but sci-fi elements in there. But it's also from CGE, who just makes really good games, right? So we're getting a new Euro from them. We know it's going to be solid. It's bright, it's colorful. Like, a lot of things are evoking the sky and space, like this brilliant blue color. I love it. So I don't know as much about it as I would like, partially just because I do plan on going to play it. Mm-hmm. But it's from a first-time designer, but with that CGE development support. So I feel good about this one. It looks really solid.
Yeah, they do a great job with the development, and they do a great job with like accessible Euro games.
Yeah. So that'll be really fun. Galactic Cruise has a demo once again. When did they kickstart this? Like about a year ago now?
Yeah, I think so.
So they've been running this thing around and demoing it for like mm-hmm. a year and a half, 2 years now. But maybe we get to see like a closer to finished version of it, because they are still noting a release date of Q1, which means it's going to be getting close.
I had seen a version of this at the Level Up convention. It was in front of me. I was like, oh, there's a lot of pieces, which yeah. is usually pretty cool. And then I had seen people play it. I was like, what did you think? And they're like, it's good, but you literally have like a little mini rule book that you have to kind of go through on your turn. So I was just like, I don't know. Like, I'm backing away slowly.
Yeah, I don't love that, but you know, sometimes it's good.
Sometimes
Lacerda games have that sometimes. Okay, well, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
maybe we can get a demo in this year. Last year we couldn't get a demo in.
Sure.
Rock Hard 1977. Now this came out at Essen. It's from Devere. I had put it aside at first, but I was talking to somebody a couple days ago and they were like, it's actually really solid. So it's about basically becoming a rock star in the 70s. So, which you can tell by the cover. but it's a cool theme, and Devere always has really solid art direction, I think, is one of the things they do really well with their games. So it looks evocative of that space and time. Mm-hmm. The mechanics kind of support that feel. It's shortish. It's one of the smaller box type of things. So it's not like a big sprawling Euro from them. It's $50. So we'll see. But I definitely want to try it out at the convention.
They have a lot of games coming out this year from Devere.
Yeah, Devere really is just leveled it up.
Mm-hmm.
Ratcheted it up. Arx is going to be there. We've played it. We discussed it. So it's not like I'm personally going out of my way to get it. But I have a feeling this is going to be very, very hot. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will be at this booth. Rolling down here, I'm gonna track down a demo of Revenant, which I talked about a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. The new Mind Clash game from Alan Kirkaby, the thematic sequel to Voidfall. Mechanically, it looks very different, but I will love to get a demo. Probably I won't be able to because I usually only have one table when traveling. Mind Clash doesn't have the biggest booth at any of these conventions, but just, if nothing else, get some pictures of the pretty artwork.
It's very exciting. I'm really looking forward to that. If I could get a play of that, that'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Mm-hmm. Another one that is coming up soon, Molly House mm-hmm. will have a demo. Whirligig Games is going to be there. This is the game about the queer community in 1720s London mm-hmm. That placed really well in the Zenobia Awards for historical fiction games. Or not. Just historical games, not fiction. And Whirligig is publishing it, which is awesome. So the designer, Joe Kelly, working with Cole Whirly, it just looks solid. They're going to have a demo there. I know it's coming out soon.
Yeah, last year it was at PAX as well. And I think our friend Eddie got a chance to demo it and was excited.
Oh, great.
So it looks good.
It's close to finished, which is great. Mm-hmm. So you can see hopefully a finished version. This next one here, I'm sure is on your list. The Fellowship of the Ring trick taking game.
Yes, it looks great.
Yeah, it's so pretty looking. From this company I've never heard of.
Office Dog. You know Office Dog. I'm like,
yeah, Office Dog. There's just those guys from this designer who's never done anything before. Like, which is great. Good on him. But like, I just the art direction here of like the stained glass.
Love it.
For the cards. Love it's it. So cool.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, I fully expect this to sell out. So this, yeah, if I'm going to track down anything, because I don't really have a shopping list this year, it'll be this.
Agreed.
I don't expect to get it, but I'm going to try to get it.
I'm going to try.
All right. Moving down the list here, we have a jazz game that looks pretty good. Again, kind of driven by the artwork. Bebop.
Mm-hmm.
I just love the look of that cover. So it's from Bitewing Games. The unfortunate part of it is that despite the wonderful cover, the board is just boring as all get out. So I don't know. But hopefully the game is interesting.
Mm.
Daitoshi. Mm. It's a new one from Devir. I think this was on your list too,
it
right?
It was on my list. I was really excited about this. It looks great. And it has a really nice cover. There's actually a article from the designer about putting this game together. But if you take a look at the actual game itself, it looks like a lot of interesting dynamic elements. Top-notch production. Devir does a great job, don't get me wrong, but this looks even better than typically Devir does. So this is definitely on my list to pick up.
Yeah, it's way up there for me too, because this is Danny Garcia, mm-hmm, who designed Barcelona.
Yes.
Which jumped up on both of our top 100s, right?
Mm-hmm.
She also designed Windmill Valley, which we have not formally reviewed that yet because I played it during our top 100 break, but also very solid. Just a really interesting, evocative, cool representation of the tulip trade. And so this one's a little more fantasy-ish, and I dig that.
Mm-hmm. Looks great.
Yeah. All right. Moving down the list here, another game that jumped out at me that I at first kind of skimmed past, but then reading about it more, I was like, ooh, I want to try this one out, is Compile Main 1.
Mm.
So this is designed by Michael Yang, who is a new designer, but he's working with Greater Than Games, which always a good sign. That's what they're doing. So it is an area of majority influence type game, but it's got this kind of, it's a two-player game, which a lot of these programming type of games end up being. You're like machine versus machine type of thing. So you're competing against artificial intelligences, or maybe you are competing. Yeah, that's right. You are the artificial intelligences. You are competing against each other, trying to get an understanding of the world through these different programming things. So it's basically like machine learning gamified,
mm-hmm,
which I think if it works could be really cool.
Agreed.
Yeah. So I think it's like a built out longer version of one of those long pack games. Rebel Princess. I know you've mentioned this one a couple times, right?
Yeah, I did a preview on this, and this is one of my, I think, the buyer's guide that we talked about, this with Family Games.
Yeah, yeah.
Plays a lot of people, great production, excellent artwork, a new take on Hearts with some special actions that kind of play along with it, and a new twist on a lot of those classic princess fairy tales.
Yeah.
So, very cool.
Yeah, that looks really, really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Took a different kind of spin of a thing from Bezier.
Yes.
All right. Ark Nova's getting another map pack.
Sure, why not?
Cool, why not? It's our number one game to the listeners, apparently, so, you know, gotta shout it out.
No, it's they keep pumping it out, and we talked about this a long time ago, and I had predicted that this Ark Nova could be the next number one. I'm sorry. Like, it just did all the things that everyone loved that was done previously, but just did all the things that people loved. So
yeah, it's like an Oscar bait movie. No one's going to argue if it's good, mm-hmm, or not. You're just like, yeah, but it was designed to do that.
Yeah. And people like animals. So yeah, it's straight up animals. It's not dragons. It's not weird alternate dimension aliens.
Ooh, so give me Ark Nova dragons.
At some point you probably will.
Yeah, because, you know, like Wingspan, I'm like, all right. But Wormspan, I'm like, oh, this is nice.
That's
give
right.
Give me Ark Nova dragons. A dragon zoo.
Ark Nova flames or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ark Explova. I don't know. We'll workshop it. All right. Black Forest. New Rosenberg game. I'm working with Tito Lorenz. This is Capstone's going to have this. Beautiful cover. I don't This is the Glass Road kind of re-implementation, right?
Yeah, you heard about this when you played Glass Road, and now he's bringing the wheels back. So there's two resource wheels, it's Tableau Building, and it's Uwe Rosenberg in his lane. This is what he's about. So it should be different enough from Glass Road. So it'll be really interesting to see how different. And fantastic production and art design here from Capstone.
Yeah, beautiful looking. Rosenberg pops up again with a game working on, not by himself this time, but working with O'Day, the designer of La Granja, as well as Michael Keller, on Plantanubo, which was a launch at Essen, but it will be available from Devere at PAX as well.
Man, Devere, they got like adrenaline shot in their veins or something.
I know.
The heck, man. We used to go to talk to Devere. We were like the only people talking to them. And now it's just like, and now the biggest games. Like, they just produced White Castle. And everyone's like,
Yeah.
White Castle made them all the money. And now they're like, yeah, we're producing everything.
Yeah. They've had some really cool looking things the last few years. None of them have been amazing.
Red Cathedral
is great. Yeah. But like Botoku was really, like, it looked really cool and exciting. It was meh. Lacrimosa I was really excited about, and it kind of met out. So hopefully this one's good.
Sure.
All right. A handful of games here that are going to be demoed. We got Knitting Circle and Point Galaxy, both from Flatout Games, AEG as well. So Point Salad / City, both very good. Now in space.
Gotta love it. Space.
Going to space.
Card drafting. Sequence building.
Mindclash has their Ironwood, kind of their smaller card play game that they launched.
Yep.
So 1 to 2 players, under an hour. I don't know why it's Mindclash. Like, you guys shouldn't have published this. It's too short. What are you doing?
Why is this not more obtuse of a game?
Yeah, it's crazy. couple big Kickstarter type releases that you and I got recently will be for sale. So again, we have these, we've talked about these, but if you want them, they'll be there. Unconscious Minds from Fantasia Games will be, get this, $170. I'm sure it's like the full thing, but gross. Cardboard Alchemy will also have Andromeda's Edge. They're listing it at $70, so I'm assuming retail.
Sure.
Because the big full thing is way more than that. All right. Anything else you want to throw in there?
Oh, yeah. I was looking at Battalion, War of the Ancients. This is from Osprey Games. I don't know too much about it, but obviously you're taking charge of the Roman legions, and you have a number of different troops that are battling each other out. It's a 2 to 4 player game, so it's not like your typical 1v1 kind of thing. But it seems like, as far as like gameplay is concerned, and you know, like each of the factions has different troops, plays a little differently, and it's one of those that looks so neat. Like, it's just such a neat design and organizational structure for that kind of battle game. And I was just, you know, really interested in checking that out. I'm also looking at Everdell Duo. Obviously, Everdell is, you know, I'm a big fan of the game itself. There's so many versions of it. I've not played all the versions, but a streamlined 2-player version of this is something that is right up my alley. And especially when you can actually read the cards, because they're very little type. So like, this is a very small board where you can actually get them to get it to the table and be like, oh no, I can read this. I can play with this too. Another game and its expansion that's coming out is called Very Bad Lands. And there's two here, and it's playing different dinosaur species, very cartoony kind of artwork, and looks cool. Card game that you can play at the table, a lot of different actions, looks like fun. Obviously, War of the Ring, the card game, Fire and Swords. This is obviously the second expansion for Ian Brody's War of the Ring, the card game. You and I are big fans of this. 60 new faction cards, 9 new paths, 9 new battlegrounds, 13 new skirmishes, and a new type of battleground. I mean, more of the thing that we love. Obviously, the Northmen of the Free People, the Easterlings, and the Ruffians. It's just like, there's just more stuff. If you like the game, there's more stuff.
That's what you want. More.
And especially when it's good. And then finally, again, I hope I make sure I pronounce this correctly. Is it Euro? Y-R-O. Euro? This is a re-implementation of Magnolia. And it looks like a anime-esque, cartoony kind of straightforward card game. And you're playing one of these different factions and you're recruiting different characters and heroes. And you're building up a grid. And those grids that you build up benefit off the different cards. So unlocking special abilities and powers throughout. So it looks pretty cool. Comes from a very good game. The original one was more of like, I guess, medieval kind of Western European kind of thing. And this is more of an anime, arty, cutie little animal kind of thing. So some really cool things. Hopefully they play very well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of really interesting things. One more I wanted to throw in, because I kind of skipped over it on accident, is the new Dune Imperium expansion. Mm-hmm. Bloodlines is going to be there. So they pre-released their last expansion at PAX as well. So it's an expansion for both Dune Imperium and Uprising. So you can get it if you have either of those. Mm. And just gives new ways to achieve victory. So you're going to get Sardaukar commanders mm-hmm. now. Sardaukar! and then just a bunch of other cool stuff. Because that's how they roll. But yeah, it's more. And every time they add my stuff to the game, it's like, yeah, you're watering down the deck, but it's cool and it's interesting and it's engaging. They haven't had a bad expansion yet, yeah. So I'm excited for this.
I'm hoping to get a chance to see or play Defenders of the Realm Legends Edition. The artwork is throwing me, so I would love to get a chance to play it and see if that kind of brings it back a little bit.
Yeah.
And
I saw they canceled that like right after we talked about it last week. So hopefully it comes back.
They made a very big mistake with the what they were charging. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And they just came out previously, same company, with Freedom 5, which was also utilizing the Defenders of the Realm mm-hmm. game mechanics and everything. And that was the first campaign that like I backed it immediately. I love Sentinels of the Multiverse. I love Defenders of the Realm. And they just kept adding stuff to the point where it was like, I don't even remember what I was backing it at, 200 plus, and then mm-hmm. it was 300 plus, and then I backed out at that point. Yeah. I was just like, I just can't. Like, what are you guys doing? And then I think it ended up at like 400 plus, and I was really honestly mad about that because I wanted to back that, but like, I'm sorry, like that is ridiculous. At some point, like, I need to play the base game before I invest a car payment in a game that may take a couple of years. And then they come out with this new Defenders of the Realm version, which is not, and again, usually when we talk about reprints, like it could have been a reprint. The people would have been like, I've played it, I'm on board. This is not a reprint. Like it has certain elements. And then like, again, to get the things that you want to get for this type of game, like you do need all the minions. You do need the special, you know, the special bad guys you fight and stuff like that. And again, it went from like somewhat of a reasonable price to like with all the extras and things. I'm just like, no, how do you not get this? Like you just did this previously and you Defenders of the Realm was my number one game of all time for quite some time. I still own it. I still play. We played it. Like, I love that game. You took someone who loved the game and you pushed them out of it twice.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing, man? Like, I don't do that.
Yeah, they got drunk on all that Spirit Island money. That's what they did. Like, we can charge whatever we want.
I mean, it's bursting the bubble, man. And like, you're killing games like that. And then, I don't know, it's just too much. And again, it's heartbreaking because you want other people to play it. So,
yeah.
So maybe we'll play it. Maybe we'll see it. Maybe we'll play
it. Yeah, yeah. If we can, I would love to.
So yeah, a lot of good games out there. There always is surprises. There's always stuff that is not on the list and shows up at the convention. Typically, those are a lot of the fun games.
We have been teased on a handful mm-hmm. through press releases that we're not supposed to talk about yet. So we'll get to talk about it next week, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah, Asmodee is going to be showing off a bunch of stuff for the future. So that's stuff that we can talk about at a later date. And certainly, I think it's a good opportunity to get a lot of those Essen games to the table. Because mm-hmm. typically, sometimes you don't see them, and that's always been my joy and pleasure to actually see an Essen game show up at PAX in the U.S.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the best. Yeah, I love this convention for that, too. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that Rosenberg game I was going to have to wait till June for. I could just buy it now.
So, yeah, no, a lot of great stuff. Check it out. The list is on BoardGameGeek. Thank you for all of their work up there, for putting that out there. And again, if you have any insight or updates or games that you got to the table at PAX or picked up some of these games, please let us know. Hit us up. Our question of the week will be going back up. So we want to hear from you about those who attended. Even if you didn't attend, what games are you interested in? We will be there in a couple of days for the time this podcast, you know, comes out. So hit us up and let us know. And we'll check those things out for you. And we'll let you know how good or bad those happen to be. All right, everyone. Until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need parts now? O'ReillyAuto.com offers in-store pickup, same-day home delivery, or next-day home shipping. Get more parts your way at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.